toward the end of last year, Blind Bargains consulted with some industry experts in the blind community, including the Blind Geek Zone's Rick Harmon, Ranger from the Ranger Station blog, the Fred's Head Companion's Michael McCarty, and yours truly, Am I an Expert?, to compile the top news stories of 2009. I recently had the pleasure of visiting with Rick Harmon of the Blind Geek Zone and J.J. Mehta of Blind Bargains about the top 11 stories of 2009. So let's start with number 11, the iBill. Have either one of you guys had a chance to play with it yet?
I have not. They've been having so many requests and calls for people that want to have iBills and play with them that they were on their list of people.
I mean, someone might think $99 is expensive for a money identifier, but when you consider what it does,
and compared to the prices of money identifiers that were out there before, it's smaller and cheaper.
I suppose the question is when bills get updated, which does happen occasionally, is that going to completely cause you to have a dead product?
I believe there's a mechanism built in for updates. I don't think they really describe how that works. I'm not sure if there's a USB port on it or. I believe there is a way, though, for they would have to factor that in.
That's what I read on one of the reviews.
So there's been at least two or three different demos that have been published now. They've all given very positive reviews. There's a couple of little minor quibbles about it, like there's no headphone jack and little things like that. But for what it does and compared to what was out there, that's, I think, why it made the list.
Number 10, accessible event. I think it's a big deal, but I think it's one of those things that's not as obvious. It's not as flashy as some products. You guys maybe agree with that, have a different take on that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think probably the most underrated part of this whole thing is the compatibility with GoToMeeting and some of the other sites that are being used. Humanware was actually doing a presentation on GoToMeeting with the Intel Reader, so I immediately wrote them back, like, hey, how is this going to be accessible? And they wrote me right back, like, we're using accessible events, so if you want to come in, just let us know, and we'll make accommodations for you. So any company for the federal government who does, anybody who's doing meetings, that is probably one of the biggest deals of this. The other part of it is the fact that you can share Microsoft Word documents and web pages and things like that, and they immediately come up on the user's screen. That is really cool to watch in action. If you've never seen it in action, do try out one of the Serotalk tech chats on Thursday nights. It's really cool to watch as they're going through and talking about all different websites and resources on a show, how Michael Loff is flashing all of the resources up on the screen so you can kind of follow along. You can bookmark one if it's interesting to you, and you can just kind of do what he's doing. It's really cool to watch that in action.
Number 9, Orator and its lack of release.
There's still, we haven't heard, the last thing we heard was the pre-launch in October. Looks like on the site, they're still talking about publicly confirming support for specific devices, but not much on release dates. We did a timeline on this for Blind Bargains, and the announcement of the BlackBerry goes all the way back. At least publicly saying that Humanware was going to do a BlackBerry product in September of 2007. They're quoted in the New Zealand Herald saying that they're going to have a BlackBerry product and it's going to be out by next spring, as in 2008. And I can understand delays and things like that, but it's gotten a bit ridiculous. And we had the pre-launch in Florida, which is kind of funny because I thought we had that at CSUN. Yeah. They had a big announcement of it. And then they were demonstrating at the conventions, which is fine. You can demonstrate proprietary and new stuff at the conventions, but there's been a lot of delays, and maybe it's RIM's fault. We don't really know. It would just be nice to hear something from Humanware or RIM or something. What's taking so long? Just would like to see a little bit of upfrontness. At least come forward and let us know what's going on.
Yeah, I think
they'd gain a lot more respect from their customers if they did that. As far as screen readers for phones, it's good. If they're saying $450. That's higher than any other screen reader for a mobile phone.
Yeah, and another big deal there is one of the demonstrations I heard on Tech Talk when they were demonstrating it there or talking about it. Somebody brought up the fact that if you changed your BlackBerry, you'd have to buy another full copy, of the Orator, and kind of tried to talk it down and act like, you know, maybe that won't be a big deal, or, oh, maybe we can do something about it. But boy, to me, that would be a huge deal.
It sounds like we just need some more info. I mean, I think that's kind of the bottom line of this whole discussion. There's more questions than answers at this point.
Right. We thought they were going to be on the top 10 for 2009, but for a totally different reason, because they had released a product. But yeah, right. The only reason they're on this list is because they haven't done anything.
Didn't. Right. Number 8, RFBND, free downloads.
They got a grant. I believe it's the same organization, program that gave Bookshare their grant.
Okay.
And so now they're able to also offer free memberships to individuals, which is actually a little further than what Bookshare did, because Bookshare is just free memberships for students. So any person now can get a free membership from RFBND. And if you combine that with now the ability to download books, which is something that we've been waiting for years and years, especially for students. But they do have a lot of general interest titles, novels and other books too. So it isn't just for students. For instance, they'd have like the AP style guides recorded, and a lot of technical manuals and things like that. So people think of RFBND just for students, but there really are a lot of good books. And since it's now free, you might as well check it out. And it's supported on virtually every device out there with the book sense coming next month. And many of the complaints that people used to have about, it wasn't really about RFBND, but about books on cassette, I mean, they've kind of been eradicated now with Daisy. You don't have to fast forward through 3 tapes. They used to have those little braille cards that would say, pages 28 to 32 is on tape 2, side 3. So now you can just type, use your player and type in the page number you want. And it is a lot more practical, and they're read by people.
Number 7, the Louis Braille coin.
The Louis Braille coin was created because of a law that was passed a few years back, and basically it's a $1 coin with embossed Braille, the first coin ever to have embossed Braille on it. There's a capital sign and a BRL. The initial idea was put forth by the National Federation of the Blind, but it ultimately ends up benefiting everybody in two fronts. First, it gets the idea of Braille out to the general public, and especially to the coin collecting community. If you consider that over 200,000 of these coins were sold throughout the year, and that combined with the PR and everything else, the coin was used on a few coin tosses for football games, things like that. So that alone has furthered the cause for Braille literacy, and at least a lot more people know that Braille is still being used. And the other part of that is money from the sale of each coin is raised to help pay for Braille literacy programs. If you look at the fact that less than 10% of blind people now are reading Braille, that in many people's eyes, including my own, is a travesty, considering the importance that Braille still holds. A lot of people are saying that electronic devices have replaced Braille, and Braille is no longer necessary, but I'm sure many can attest, and many that are in professional careers and elsewhere, of the importance that Braille still has. Not necessarily in, it doesn't have to be big paper books. It can be electronic displays. But I know NFB and ACB and a lot of other people are definitely for the cause of Braille literacy. So it'll be good to hopefully see some more programs sprout out from the sale of the coin.
Yeah, that was interesting. Another place that used the coin, and I wish it had been more promoted and more publicized in the news and stuff. But NASA actually had one of the coins that flew earlier in the year on a space shuttle mission that serviced the Hubble Space Telescope. I liked them, and I'm a coin collector myself back from my sighted days, and I still do even though I can't see. But sure. I bought several of the proofs, and very, very nice coins.
It's still out there. If you can't buy them from the Mint anymore, if people are wondering, they're around on eBay and other places. We've posted some links on Blind Bargains before, but they are still there. If you want to, if you buy it now, the money won't go towards Braille literacy directly, but you'll still get your coin.
Number 6, Windows 7 same day screen reader release. I'm still a Windows XP user, and just because, well, for I had some memory issues that I needed to take care of on this computer and stuff before I even thought about upgrading to Windows 7. But I assume that both of you guys are you using Windows 7 at least on one computer? Is that correct? I know Rick is.
I am definitely not, actually.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
That makes me feel a little better.
Not yes. Everybody is the 7 yet. You are, Rick.
Yeah, I am. The funny thing there was, I believe, the first person to actually do a podcast demonstration of the product. I actually did a podcast on it on January 9th when the initial public beta came out. So yeah, it's huge that, you know, we could actually use a screen reader, you know, on the product, you know, basically all the ways through the beta and the RC, and like you said, the very first day when everybody was able to buy it, you know, we could actually use our screen readers with it.
Yeah. There was no waiting at all. Vista was cool, but you didn't really have much of a beta until when Vista came out.
Right. And you couldn't really use your screen readers much with any of the betas of Vista either. So yeah, it's huge, I think.
Now Ranger made a good point, and it's mentioned in the article about the magnifier that's built into Windows 7. I can't attest to it much personally, but I guess it's a lot more full-fledged than the old magnifier. So that's an interesting development to watch. And the point is, maybe, you know, the next Windows will have a screen reader, and we don't know. Maybe that would be a good thing. Maybe that wouldn't be a good thing. But it's interesting to see Microsoft taking a little more active interest in accessibility.
Number 5, Amazon's promised accessible Kindle. We'll have to see how that develops. That's kind of an interesting story, because not so much a pushback from Amazon on accessibility, but I guess from the publishers, right?
Right.
Yeah, Amazon added text-to-speech functionality in the Kindle that they released last spring, and then the publishers were all up in arms about this because they say that it infringed on their copyrights. So Amazon then made it an option for publishers whether or not to enable or disable the text-to-speech functionality. Mind you, that functionality wasn't even accessible because the menus still didn't talk. But still, there was an interesting fight, which is still going on, and it's probably going to play into how accessible the Kindle ends up being. My guess is it'll be one of those things that the first version probably won't be perfect. It might work in limited cases, and it might take them a couple tries to get it right, but maybe eventually they will.
Yeah, I mean, you know, initially I didn't think much of it. I remember when the Kindle 2 came out and, you know, all this uproar, and I said, oh, you know, we got a lot of access to books, you know, who cares? But, you know, I kind of thought about it over the year, and, you know, now it is a really big deal to me because, you know, although we do have a lot of access to books now, more books than we've probably ever had in our history, but still, it's only, you know, one thing I read, you know, maybe 5% of the books that are out there. And, you know, so this would allow us to have access to, you know, hundreds of thousands of books.
Yeah. And I think the other key here, you know, going back to, let's look at the screen readers, we'd have same day access to books.
Yes, exactly. Not whenever the places were able to get around to recording them. We could just go buy them, just like sighted guy down the street.
I mean, technically, if you want to be fair, we have that now with Audible and a lot of the audiobooks that are available. But one of the things about that is usually the audiobook costs more than the printed book.
So. Right. And even still, Audible only has, you know, 40, 50,000 books. You know, Amazon alone, I believe, on the Kindle has nearly 500,000 books.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a huge, huge leap.
It'll be interesting to also watch. There was this announcement a couple months ago of a Kurzweil ebook reader, which supposedly was going to do close to the same thing as a free software product for computers and phones. But that was supposed to be released in November, and that has been pushed back. We haven't heard anything else on that. So maybe, hopefully on the first part of the year, maybe by ATIA, we'll hear more on that.
Number 4, death to the SMA. Rest in peace. I remember when that whole big announcement came from Saratech. The SMA is dead. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I don't think it's not as big of a deal to us who are high tech users, and, you know, most of your higher tech users are not really using system access as much, you know, because we grew up on JAWS or WindowEyes, and we like the scripts and some of the advanced features that are built in. But we're like 5% of the market. If you're already, you know, Saratech, who market, you know, they're trying to market a lot to schools, to VA agencies, that's a really good selling point. Because when they're trying to cut costs, and you can tell them, hey, you won't have to spend $200 a year to keep all your products current if you're talking about installing, making a computer lab accessible, making schools, computers accessible, libraries, etc. And you can say, hey, you can buy this now and we'll support you forever. That is a pretty big selling point. You combine that with another story that didn't make the list but is kind of related, how system access on a netbook, you can get a license for $149. I think one of the good points of the free updates got demonstrated, though, when iTunes 9 came out in the store. The access to the store got broken in both JAWS and WindowEyes, and System Access was out with a free fix within the week.
Yeah, they're quick about their updates, that's for sure.
They are. Do you guys see either one of the two other screen readers going to like a web-based subscription service?
System Access doesn't have enough market share to influence either JAWS or WindowEyes at this point. I mean, there's that, and there's already MVDA, which is free and come a long way since its initial release, and that really hasn't influenced anybody either. So,
not yet.
Right.
Not yet.
Exactly.
But it is great to have options, and I don't think there would be as far as a web-based solution, you have the free essay to go. So. That is definitely a nice. You never know, because that 2 years ago at ATIA it was that. Last year it was the SMA. So who knows what it'll be in 2010?
And that's a lot of the excitement. I think is that there are so many. I mean, we're sitting here talking about. We've talked a lot more than 10 or 11 things that are possible that are maybe coming. I mean, we can all probably remember back to when there weren't that many. I know I certainly can.
I sent out the list to everybody. What we did is we kind of ranked everything from 1 to 10. And just pulling from the news stories on Blind Bargains and a few others, there was like 55, 60 different things on the list. And there certainly could have been a few more on top of that. So there are a lot of worthy stories for 2009.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, it's been incredible. I mean, I know I don't go back as far as either one of you go. I only have about a 5-year history, but I know how much things have changed for me just in 5 years. What I had access to in 2005 and what I have access to now, beginning of 2010, it's incredible.
Oh, it has exploded. I mean, well, main menu, I mean, it's been around for almost the whole decade. It was one of the first, really good journalistic efforts as far as, reviewing technology for the blind. And a lot of what we have now has spawned off of that. I mean, certainly there were magazines before that, but a lot of that, you'd have to wait in the mail for it to come. And, obviously it's been a decade of everything coming online.
And it's one of the things, amazingly, that the blind community almost is equal to the sighted community. In ways, internet access, the things we have access to now, there are a lot of other areas we're not in equal footing with the sighted community, but I really feel, especially in the last year or two, internet access and the things, like you said, that we can get now on the internet, tutorials and stuff, I really believe, we're almost on equal footing with, the sighted community.
If you stop and think about it, blind people can network and get information from each other.
Especially through Twitter. If you watch some of the recent product launches and how they've unfolded, how new information has been kind of leaked through Twitter and how quickly it bounces around through people.
Yeah.
An excellent example of that, and we might as well talk about it now. I mean, last night, I was listening. We were listening to the Twitter community. We're listening to a podcast that Larry Skutkan put up on Blind Cool Tech about an OCR program for the Symbian phone. And he just happened to mention in his presentation, I'm recording this on a prototype of the new BookPort Plus that we hope comes out sometime next year. And, I mean, it just went nuts. It went crazy. And immediately, Blind Bar got on the act.
I think of that at the same time because we both tweeted the same thing. I mean, almost immediately.
Like, hey, there's got to be a BookPort Plus. And it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't really care about the little OCR program he was playing with.
No.
I don't know that he had any idea he did that. I mean, I know he probably knew he said it, but he probably didn't.
But he does now.
He certainly
does. It's kind of funny how stuff slips under the radar. I mean, that we found that in the APH annual report, which they published publicly. And in retrospect, we're going to start looking at those as soon as they come out now.
Yeah.
There are some interesting nuggets of information in that report.
But number three, this is a kind of interesting one. Freedom Scientific signed Braille drivers. I can't even say that, hardly. That's a tongue twister. Now, am I correct that works with 64-bit versions of JAWS, but not 32-bit? Is that the problem exists, right?
Not exactly.
Okay.
It does exist with 32-bit drivers that were introduced after JAWS 10.
Okay. All right.
So those are all affected, too.
So if the Braille display manufacturer doesn't purchase, what's the right term, certification of their drivers from Freedom Scientific, the Braille display will not...
Annual certification.
Annual certification, annual. Thank you. It will not work with JAWS.
Not directly, no.
Right. And I saw some numbers posted. What is it, $9,000 for the first year, something like that?
Yeah, $5,000 additional each year. Yes.
Every year. Yeah, and Microsoft charges what, $250?
Yeah, $250 for each update.
For their mirror drivers, right. And then I the think that, that Freedom Scientific wasn't even certified under that program.
No.
So, I mean, how huge an impact is this going to be, do you guys think?
I think the story to watch is going to be who's going to win the battle. Because, you know, PEP and Mirror, I guess, was the only one that so far that had had their driver certified. It'll be interesting to see who else is planning on it. Back to that APH report, it looks like they're going to go ahead with certification. I'm not sure, you know, the reasoning behind any companies choosing to do it or not to do it. The thing that gets me is there wasn't a lot of lead time. If they you would think when you want your, it's kind of like when Microsoft released Vista and there weren't many drivers available for it. And so that it prevented a lot of people from upgrading to Vista. If you know, Vista's supposed to be such a big deal, you would give manufacturers plenty of lead time. And we don't know what was done privately before the release, but it seems like you would make a real concerted effort to make sure that there's as many drivers out as possible before the release of JAWS 11. Yeah. But the biggest problem I have with the whole situation is the price.
Right.
I could understand security. I mean, I'm whatever they're trying to accomplish, you know, if they want to charge a couple hundred bucks for it, $9,000 is ridiculous. Absolutely right. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, it's hurting people. It's, you know, I talk to people every day that says, well, you know, I can't get my drivers to work in JAWS 11. You know, I called them and they told me this and they told me that. And, you know, I hear it day after day after day. And you know, I don't know how much it hurts the company to have to do it, but I guarantee you, it's hurting, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people that, you know, have got SMAs for 11 and are now finding out their old Braille display isn't going to work for whatever reason, and they don't have $5,000 to replace it.
Right. That's the big story right there, Rick. And
sure.
you're the guy that that sees that every day. And I
right.
think that's the
crime.
Yeah.
What we don't see a lot of in our industry is we're too small of an industry to see how much churn there really is because of a move like this, and you know, so we don't really have numbers to track, because most people will say, well, I don't like this, but I'm not going to switch to WindowEyes because I can't afford it, or even the same with System Access or some of the others. But you know, I definitely have seen evidence of people switching from JAWS to other screen readers, you know, again on Twitter and other places. I mean, it's very anecdotal, but there are some people doing it. You know, when GW Micro has their lease to own programs, System Access has their lease program, NVDA is free. So, you know, or you can get a Mac. So, I mean, there are options out there, but, you know, there isn't a lot that's free. And so some people and there's also the fact that people are just used to JAWS and they don't want to try to learn something new.
So, Rick, in your training, are you still... Is there still a vast majority of users who are using JAWS? Is it equalizing at all? What are your experiences?
Mostly I train JAWS people. I do get a request here and there for WindowEyes, but you know, it does seem to still be the vast majority of the people that at least come to me are JAWS people. And my whole problem with this, you know, and I think I'll just go ahead and say it publicly. I'm not going to say anything bad, but my whole problem with this thing, and at first, another one of these things that I guess I didn't really have a problem with at first till I really thought about it, but you know, how can you, as a company, demand people, you know, companies sign their drivers when Freedom Scientific doesn't sign any of their stuff? You know, their display driver's not signed. How dare you yeah. demand that the Braille companies do this when you're not even doing it?
Yeah.
And another problem I have with it is if Freedom Scientific didn't sell Braille displays, I wouldn't have a problem with this. But where I have a huge problem with this is that Freedom Scientific does sell Braille displays. And a lot of people, you know, I'm not going to say one way or another because I just don't know, but a lot of people say this is their way of forcing the rest of the market, you know, out in a way, you know, and I just have a lot of problems with that.
Sure.
Sure. And I don't know what the legal ramifications are of that, but, you know, there could be something there. And I'm sure if there is, some other company is going to step up and, you know, do the right processes or, you know, to make that happen. But, you know, it doesn't, you're right. It doesn't seem right, especially the fact that they, you know, they'll support their old Braille light, but, you know, a current Braille display you can't even use.
Well, all right, we got two more. And number two is the BookSense. That ranks pretty high. It must be a pretty big deal. Why do you guys think that went so high up the list?
All I can say about it is it was amazing. You know, it came out at the end of June, and boy, people just were buying it, you know, like there was no tomorrow. So,
and of course, with like any product, I mean, when it was first released, there were some problems, and I know, Rick, that you've talked about those a little bit. Has the latest firmware upgrade fixed any or all of those issues, as far as you can tell?
Yeah, I think so. I think the firmware updates have helped a lot. I haven't had near the problems out of the unit that I did with the initial release. So, yeah, I think they're making good progress.
For me, I think it's just, you know, the form factor of it. It's smaller than the Stream. It had, you know, I like the Bluetooth on the XT version, the built-in memory, and some of the additional formats that it played. But I think the bigger story might even be just all the competition now between the book players is really kind of pushing things forward. Between this, the Plex Talk kind of gets overshadowed in all this because their first version was a little bit clumsy, but they're up to version 3.0 now. And from what I hear, it's gotten a lot better than it was. And now if they're combining with APH, you know, that we're going to have a third very formidable competitor in this market. So it's really good to see things push forward in this space, because there probably will be another major either update or new player that'll be on our top 10 next year.
Exactly. And it's like I was saying earlier, it's another one of these areas that, you know, the sighted community has all these players at their you know, that they want to use, and you know, now all of a sudden, yeah, we're actually starting to get some really nice players. And yeah, the BookSense, I mean, I've showed it to a few sighted people and said, oh, wow, that's really cool. You know, it looks just like, you know, something they would use. You know, a lot of the products, even the Victor Stream to some extent, you know, just doesn't look nearly as modern, you know, and yeah, the BookSense is sleek, sexy, modern, and, you know, yeah, it's, you know, it's great.
I'm laughing as I say this, but the Stream is kind of bulky. It's kind of big.
Compared to the BookSense, yeah,
exactly. So, what does Humanware do, guys? I mean, the Stream's probably kind of reached, getting close to the limits of its capabilities, I would think, as far as hardware design and what they can do with it. Do they invest in another player? How do they compete?
They've got this new 3.1 firmware that's also kind of like the Orator, kind of.
Been pushed back several times.
Yeah, supposedly I'm hearing in the background, you know, it's supposed to be early January now. So,
right.
But yeah, what is it going to offer, and what is this paid?
$59 upgrade to
the upgrade. What's that going to give us? You know, that's right. It's going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah.
To see how that pans out, and how many people will buy it, and how many people won't.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Eventually, they're going to have to do another player.
Yeah.
If they're smart, they're doing R&D on that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Especially with a new with the BookPort Plus now coming out, and you know, if that machine indeed has some sort of Wi-Fi capability, which we might not at first, but it sounds like it's possible, that, you know, that will be a major leap forward.
Absolutely. And I know Larry ScootCon wants that. I mean, in the interview I did with him on Main Menu, that was one of the things he mentioned that he'd like to see in a player. So that is definitely on his radar.
I just wonder how much that'll bump prices up. You know, they've got to stay competitive. You know,
it was interesting to see because apparently, according again to that APH thing, the Wi-Fi chip is already built into the Plex stock.
Oh, wow.
It just hasn't been utilized yet. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, you know. If not sure if that's the release model or a prototype, but you know, it was saying it's there. So you know, and Wi-Fi chips are pretty cheap, so it really shouldn't bump the cost that much. And you could make the argument now that there already is a book player with Wi-Fi, and that's the Braille Plus. But you know, obviously the price point is a lot different. You know, yeah. we're $1,500 versus you know $400 or $500. $1,500 is for the Icon without the Braille.
Yeah. And I hopefully that's what happens because, you know, when the Icon come out, you know, I was kind of shocked that, oh my, you know, $1,400. And, you know, and then the book port too at the time, you know, just kind of disappeared for whatever reason. But yeah, I hope when this comes out, it's, you know, in the $400 range, like you said, $400 to $500 range that, you know, people are going to be able to more easily afford.
It'll certainly have the most superior of all the recording options compared to, I mean, all they're talking about being able to do headings and subheadings, just what everything you'd want to do to make a DAISY book.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and if they make it simple enough to make a book, you know, that'll be a very interesting development.
Well, all right, let's get to number one. This is the big one. The iPod/iPhone/ Apple splash in the blind community. Who wants to take this? Let's let Rick take this one because, Rick, I know for a fact that you have a Mac today. Although I suppose technically the discussion was the iPod and the iPhone, iPhone and iPod Touch. But let's go ahead and start just kind of with your thoughts on the Mac as you've been playing with it for a little while.
Yeah, the word splash certainly is 100% accurate. This year has been huge for people in the blind community switching over to the Mac. And especially, you know, with the iPods that come out that were accessible. And then now, this year, the iPhone and the iPod Touch that, you know, are fully accessible VoiceOver and VoiceOver on the Mac itself. Yeah, it's been incredible. There are, you know, I think hundreds of people at the very least have switched this year to the Mac, and it's been incredible. And I said I would never do it, and guess what?
Yeah,
I bought a Mac Mini in November, and I've been playing with it. I've done a few podcasts. I'm going to do another podcast next week, and it's a very interesting machine. It certainly has its learning curve from somebody that's like myself that's used Windows forever, but it certainly has some advantages, and it's intriguing.
Your thoughts, JJ?
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't have a Mac, but I guess my thoughts center more on how they've taken the functionality of VoiceOver in the Mac, and they've brought it to the iPod Touch and the iPhone 3GS. The key, again, being mainstream devices that you can buy, and with no additional cost, you will have speech access. It started with the iPod Nanos last year, or 2008, and now they've brought that to the iPhone and iPod Touch, which is really cool to see considering all the additional applications that are out there. I mean, granted, the iPhone is not the best cell phone on the market. A lot of people will swear by it, but there are more equipped cell phones. A lot of the Nokias fall in that category, and even a few Windows mobile phones have more features, better cameras, et cetera. But, you know, the fact that you don't have to pay more for the screen reader, it's built right in, and a lot of the apps that are coming in from the App Store for the iPhone and iPod Touch are turning out to be accessible. There's actually a pretty long list that's sprouted from this. So there is a lot of cool developments there, and it's great to see Apple incorporating speech technology in a good portion of their products now. With that, the accessibility of iTunes, which, you know, started again in 2008, but they, you know, keep on working on it and expanding Even down to, you know, the new iPod shuffles have some sort of speech in them. And of course, the Nanos still do, the fifth generation models, as well as the models from a couple years ago. So it's nice to see Apple's commitment to this. I think it's paying off for them, and they're seeing how much it's paying off for them. And I don't see any reason why they're going to be abandoning it anytime soon.
I mean, my experience was in June for my birthday, I bought myself an iPod Nano. And my wife saw a friend's iPod Touch and fell in love with it. And that's what she wanted for Christmas. Well, she's not the most computer literate person and doesn't want to be, and was perfectly contented to let me load stuff on her iPod for her. So that justified for me being able to go ahead and buy the 32 gig version, which had VoiceOver. Yeah. And so, honestly, I prefer using the iPod Touch over the Nano. I mean, it's crazy that in 6 months, my Nano is now what I would consider old school, obsolete technology. That's just insane. But it is true. And I can tell you that it is, I mean, now, whenever I first got it, I decided to be all romantic and text her a Merry Christmas, I love you message in the notepad. And that takes some getting used to. Yeah. It's doable, but the first time you try that on a touchscreen, you're kind of...
Yeah, I bet.
It's like, what did I just get myself into here? But once you sort of calm down and play with it a little bit, it's doable. And another thing that I think is really interesting, and I swore I wasn't going to spend much time on this. The thing that really galvanized the Mac community and the blind community was the article in the NFB in June that was pretty critical of VoiceOver and the whole system. But I think that's actually been a good thing. But one of the criticisms that I didn't understand at the time was the criticism of a lack of documentation. Because when I went to the site, I found a lot of documentation.
There's tons of documentation.
As I began to read it, though, I began to understand something that might have caught the reviewer off guard, because it sort of messed with my mind at first. And that is that traditionally, blind people have to go find the alternate documentation. Okay, this is for the sighted folks. Now let me go find the blind people documentation. It's all one document,
right?
Apple. And that is pretty cool, quite honestly, to read the iPod Touch manual and find the VoiceOver gestures. They are in the manual. But by and large, if you want to know how to do something on the iPod, you just read the manual. Now, I will say Apple have done a great job of making those graphical buttons and stuff like that in the manuals accessible, and they also describe the layout of the document. So it's a good idea to go to their accessibility page, apple.com/accessibility, and download the accessible versions of the documentation. But no, it's all one document.
That is really cool to see. And I noticed they ended up publishing a subsequent article. I don't know if I'd call it a retraction, but they kind of did like a bit of an update. Another review of it in a few months later. So I think it kind of just goes to prove that it's very easy to get scared away by it because it's something new and we're not used to doing it. I've honestly walked up to a couple Macs in the stores because, hey, I can turn on VoiceOver and turn it on and kind of been a bit lost. But, but there is really good documentation and it is, very easy to learn, it seems.
Yeah. And another huge thing is, I think it's going to be big in the future, for blind people. And it really was an uproar at first, but the touch screen, access to the touch screen, we all said, oh, there is no way a blind person can use a touch screen.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, Apple come up with this gesture method to do it. And look at all the blind people now that they're using. There's still a lot of them that are saying, oh, no, you can't do that. But look at all of them.
And there'll be a lot more with Mobile Speak 4 coming out.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and look, see, now it's all of a sudden it's going to spread. And even maybe Windows 7 Touch, who knows what will happen with that. Maybe that will get accessible too. I just see it as being a huge thing because touch screens aren't going away.
No, they're not.
And we're going to have to come to grips with them. And I think what Apple did with the iPhone and the iTouch is just going to be a huge, huge thing.
And it'll be fun to watch. It really will. It'll be interesting to watch, I guess.
You know, like you said, the typing. I haven't touched one. I still don't understand how in the world you would type on it. But like you said, once you start doing it and you calm down, you can do it. Maybe, you know, the big complaint still is, well, you can't be productive with it. And I still don't know how fast you could type doing that, but...
And to be honest with you, since it is my wife's iPod, and she has it more than I do, I haven't had a chance to play with it a lot. But one of the things I can tell you is I was almost too tentative. I was just barely touching the screen and was selecting things that I didn't really intend to. But when you actually just – one of the things in the manual, and it literally says, relax your hand. And it's like that was the best advice that they put in there, because when you just rest your finger on the screen – you don't have to put pressure, but just that constant application of your finger on the screen, then you move it around.
Yeah.
Then once you find what you want, then you can double tap anywhere on the screen or use another finger to tap while that first finger is being held down. But once you figure out that it's not going to bite you, you know, it's not, yeah. and you just literally relax and play with it. All of a sudden you find out, hey, this is actually... Plus, VoiceOver uses a lot of really cool sounds. I find using the flick method so that you just brush your finger along the screen will literally take you like across the screen. And as soon as you get to the next row, you hear the little click that lets you know that you've moved to a new row. And so you have a sense of where you are on the screen as you're moving. So they've really... I think the thing that impresses me the most... is that they have obviously put a lot of thought into this, and it's not just a bunch of, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but it's not a bunch of sighted people sitting around trying to figure out what a blind person might want.
Exactly.
They've obviously incorporated some blind users and said, hey, what do you guys really need? And so somebody is taking this seriously somewhere. And
on the Mac, too, you know, talking about the VoiceOver sounds, I don't know how much you can tell it on the phone or the touch, but when I use the Mac, you know, those sounds are all there and you're moving around and I don't really understand all of it yet. I need to read the manual more, but yeah, there's all these unique sounds and some of them will come from the right, some of them will come from the left, and you know, it's trying to tell you things spatially.
Yeah.
And you know, I need to learn how to do it more. But yeah, it's incredible that, you know, that obviously they had blind people, you know, involved in this, because yeah, I don't think it was a bunch of sighted people just sitting around, oh, how can we help those poor blind people, you know?
Exactly. Wow. Well, what do you guys think is possibly going to be the big story for 2010? Let's embarrass ourselves here. We're either going to be prophets or we're going to look really foolish. So let's just have a little fun, and JJ, I'll let you go first. You probably dabble in this. Well, you don't dabble in it. You probably work in this area more than anyone else. What do you think might be a big story for 2010?
You know, I was going to go all way out on a limb, but I can't. Honestly, the biggest story I think of 2010 is what we're already kind of expecting, is the, I don't even think it'll just be Amazon, but the proliferation of a couple different options for same day book access. If it's not Amazon, it'll be coming from KNFB or via Google or via somebody. But the immediate access to books in we're talking hundreds of thousands, millions of books. I mean, it's something we've kind of already alluded to, and we know it's coming. But when that hits, and the amount of books that'll be available, I think that will be probably the biggest story of the year.
Rick, what do you think?
Wow.
I know. I should have given you guys some time. JJ just lays it out there, like, you know.
Go ahead. You know, I'm not real good at this. I don't get into things as much as JJ does, but I don't know. This may sound crazy, but you know, I didn't think much of it initially, and every time I do that, it turns out to be wrong. But the Bookport Plus, I think could be huge. You know, if it comes out and it really does some of these things that they say it's going to do, you know, that could be all of a sudden, you know, the new player on the block again. And, you know, that may turn out to be really huge. And I don't think the Freedom Scientific issue is over, you know, with the Braille. Mm-hmm. I think in 2010, you know, there's going to continue to be this fight. And I don't know, that could be another, that could mushroom into a very huge thing for 2010. I don't know.
I'll tell you the one I'd like to see for 2010. And you know, it's been talked about for several years, but you know, perhaps 2010 will be the year that we finally have a breakthrough of a really affordable Braille display. And that's something there's, I know there's been different technologies that have been in development in various labs here and there. And maybe we're finally at the point where we'll see that.
Wouldn't it be ironic, or wouldn't it be cool if the book port really did make a comeback? Because it really was the first of its kind. I mean, it really, and it was an awesome little unit. I mean, if you ever owned one of those, that was so fun and did so many cool things. And obviously, for whatever reason, you know, APH kind of really got sidelined big time. I mean, they really took a pretty good hit. And if they can actually make a comeback there and really produce another cutting edge unit, another cutting edge player, that would be pretty neat, I think.
Okay. Yeah, and looking at who was behind that, you know, Larry Skukon and their whole team, I think they're definitely capable of it.
Yeah,
I agree.
Oh yeah,
I agree. Yeah,
and that'll be huge because if you know, like I said last night on Twitter, I said, you know, there's already too many of these out here. You know, I don't know how they're good, but you know, after I read that article that JJ put out, and you know, thought about it for a little bit. Well, you know, if somehow they manage to come out with something that just does something really unique, then you know, people will buy it. And
the same thing was said about the book sense. Like, oh, there's no room for another player in the market. There's already a stream and everything. So,
and look at how that flies off the shelf. So, yeah.
I mean, mind you, come on. They sold 10,000 streams, they say, in the first few months. I know they haven't sold that many book censors. But, I mean, so, I mean, you do have more competition now, and so it's a little harder to break in. But
that's a good point.
They're definitely capable of it.
Yeah.
If they manage to do it, you know, that's going to be a big story because, like you said, there's so many of them out there now, and if they can do something different, I'm not sure how they're going to do something hugely different when it's going to be modified after the PlexTalk Portable. You would think there was only so much they could do, but you know, who knows? Like you said, Larry Skukon, man, he's golden. If anybody can do it, he's going to do it.
Absolutely. Well, I will pick a couple of possibilities. I'm kind of like, the Freedom Scientific story isn't over, the Apple story isn't over. And I am going to be interested to see what products they release next year and if they continue to include VoiceOver in these new products, how they are received, how many more blind people actually do purchase iPod touches, iPhones, Mac computers. That will be a fun story to watch, how VoiceOver may, you know, continues to improve as a screen reader. It's still very young as far as screen readers go. So I think that isn't going to be an interesting story. And I think Window Eyes could be an interesting story because they have promised browse mode overhaul. And that is one area that, you know, they really need to work on. I mean, that's one area if you surf the net using Window Eyes and if you surf the net using JAWS and System Access, I mean, if you're honest, you know, Window Eyes really needs to improve in that area. And GW Micro, they do things right. I mean, they don't, you know, they take their work seriously. So, plus they've got two other screen readers to look at that have been doing this for a while now. You know, or three if you want to count VoiceOver. So, you know, what will Window Eyes version 8 look like on the internet?
If they actually, NVDA has probably come to, if you want to talk about ARIA and live regions, NVDA has some pretty good support for that in their latest builds, so they want to look at them as well.
Excellent. Good point. Thank you. And I do need to play with that. But it will be interesting to see, I mean, can they really Can GW Micro really do some cool things with Window Eyes? So that will be also, I think, a fun story to watch. So.
Yeah, kind of forgot about that. But yeah, when I talked to Aaron at GW Micro, you know, he kind of alluded to they're doing some major rewrites on Window Eyes.
Right.
And the one issue I had about performance, he said, you know, well, we're working on it. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Window Eyes 8 could really be something big. That's true.
Is this also want to mention that we've just launched, as of today, the third annual Blind Bargains Access Award. So if you agree with us, disagree with us, or have a totally different take, we're now taking nominations for the next couple of weeks over at blindbargains.com, and then you'll be able to vote for the best products, screen readers, companies, blogs, websites, podcasts, and people of 2009.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to talk about you guys, and if you hadn't said that, I would maybe have forgotten. I mean, you guys are a pretty big story yourself, and I'm not just saying that because you're with us on the panel here, but you guys have done a lot of good work. How long have you been around?
Blind Bargains has been around since the end of 2006, and it's really been interesting to watch us evolve from strictly a deals site to now we still do a lot of that, but now we're also doing a lot more news and articles and all sorts of stuff, and we definitely accept contributions, and if our people want to send in articles or podcasts and things like that, or just want to comment on what we do. But the common misconception is it's just me. That's not true. If you look on the site, you'll see there's a few of us that are editors of the site and are putting up content. So there are a lot of people involved, and there was several that were on the panel for the top stories of 2009.
So along with blindbargains.com, we need to talk about the blindgeekzone.net, the-blind-. You better do it, Rick.
Well, actually, there's several URLs you can get to that. Just for times when guys like you announce it that way. Yeah, actually, the main address is blind-geek-zone.net, but there's several ways you can get to it, but yeah, it's been really fun. I haven't did as much this year with the site as I have in the past couple of years, but you know, like you said, information overload.
There's a lot up there. There's a lot of tutorials. You've done a lot of podcast/tutorial presentations that are, I know, a lot of help to blind.
Yeah,
people.
And it's hard to keep plugging them out, you know, to come up with something new, but. Yeah, I do try, and yeah, it's one of those places that, you know, I think has been quite helpful in the last couple of years of the blind community, and I love all the comments I get all the time, you know, thanking me for it, and you know, it's great service, I think, and Blind Bargains too. Yeah, that's a excellent service. It's, you know, really mushroomed this year. Yeah, you guys are really great.
That was Rick Harmon and JJ Meta joining me on this week's Main Menu.